This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to Connect with Community Waikato on Free FM 89.0. I'm Holly from Community Waikato, and have with me Scott Tiffany, Pukete Neighbourhood House. Actually, new name, right?
Yeah, Pukete Community Centre.
Awesome. When did the name change happen?
Okay, so the name change is sort of still in progress.
Yes, yeah.
Working through that, but felt like we needed a name that better reflected where we're heading.
You're not a little house. You are becoming a beautiful, brand new, built-for-purpose centre.
Yeah, 750 square metre, purpose-built, fit-for-purpose, brand new centre due to open early March.
How is it looking at the moment?
One word, incredible.
Yeah.
Beyond what I could have imagined. The guys have done an amazing job at getting it. They've worked really hard. And we're so close to being given the keys to go.
Tell me about what's happened over Christmas. Did everything stop Christmas, New Year's? Or have they been working through? Like, what's been happening during that period?
That did stop. They worked right up until the 23rd. It was their last day on site. They have been back from Monday just been. And then they will just continue on until the end of January, probably.
So what are they working on at the moment? What's actually happening in the build?
In the build is just defecting. So going through and going, where are the little nicks in the paint? Where are the little dents in the wall?
Oh, wow.
Outside, there's a little bit of landscaping left to be finished. And then car parking and driveway, which are they're big into that at the moment.
So why is it going to take till? Because it feels like you are right at the end of this, right?
Yeah,
and then I suppose then you've got to move in.
You've got to move in. So there's a couple of things. They've got to finish their construction, which they call practical completion.
Yes.
And then that needs a code of compliance. That means a tick in the box to say this building is safe for public inhabitants.
Yes.
So we can evac, et cetera, et cetera. Then it's all the move in. So it's waiting for the furniture to arrive. It's waiting for the blinds to be made and for all that stuff to happen.
Yeah.
And we're giving ourselves intentionally a longer period of time to get ourselves set and ready to go.
During that period, are you guys going to be working out of your old building where you set up the new one? Or like, so what's your kind of transition plan?
I have a really ambitious plan, and that's because that's the only way I do things.
Yes.
Is to keep the current location operational right up while in the background setting up the other site. So effectively, we can close the door on one location one night and open the door on the other location the next night, and that's basically the transition plan.
And will that be the day that there is a pōwhiri and a blessing?
So we're looking at a Friday to be the whole day event.
Yes.
Pōwhiri, blessing, community meal in the evening, open day style thing on the Friday.
Yep.
First thing Monday morning following that.
You're starting
the new centre. We're going back.
Oh, I'd love that. I just think that's amazing.
That's the plan.
That's the plan, yeah. Do we have a specific date?
Technically, not yet, but March the 6th. Keep that vacant in the diary. That's the day we're working towards.
I mean, it's so exciting. And we haven't had this since probably Western Community Centre build.
Yeah, 2004, which was Western.
Yeah, wow.
It's funny because council are the building owner. And so we're working through those processes around as a leaseholder, who's responsible for what. And council are sort of like, we don't really know because we've never really had a building like this, a new, brand new building that we have to try and work out what does the facility management piece look like.
Yeah.
Used to inheriting older buildings and retrofitting, not so much building from the ground up. And there's lots of different pieces of technology in there that are crazy.
Yeah, yeah, which is brilliant. And you need it. And it's going to absolutely move you into the, you know.
it's almost as if we will pretty much not forget what we know, but it's like starting again.
It is starting really fresh. But it's starting really fresh with a whole lot of relationships and a whole lot of experience. So that is cool, right?
So it's like, okay, you've got 40 years of experience doing this under your belt. You know what to do. But now it's a whole new space, a whole new way of working. and a whole lot more that we can provide the community. That's the key at the end of the day.
And that's what I wanted to ask you about. What do you think, and I know that you're forecasting here a bit, but what do you think is going to be different for your service delivery and for your community upon opening the new centre?
I think initially, obviously, the way that we operate some of our existing services will need to change slightly operationally, right?
Yeah.
Just the way the before and after school care program works. It's worked the same way for goodness knows how many years. But the biggest thing, difference for the community will be our ability to hold multiple things at one time.
Yeah, yeah.
The amount of times we get approached about different groups or users who go, I want to host this, I'd like to do that. And we have to say no because we don't have the space to accommodate.
Yeah.
Now we'll have the space to accommodate. That ability to have two, three, four different things going at once, game changer.
And that also, though, puts additional pressures on your staff being aware of what's happening in multiple spaces, right?
Yeah, so now we have to try and understand what it is like to manage a venue in terms of all the nuances that go with that. Which booking is coming when? What do they need? Do they need tea and coffee?
What are transition times between?
Yes, what's the pack up? What's the cool down?
Like? Yeah. So those sort of things would be interesting. Do you have any new services you think are likely to be able to start as a result of the build?
We've got a couple already slowly coming online. I don't want to sort of speak too far ahead of where we're at, but some job readiness opportunities coming through, as well as the ability to bring some of those services like financial mentoring, which happens in other areas of our city, to bring a financial mentor in from one of those other organizations into our space maybe once a week. Those kind of things to go, actually, we don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
Where are those experts? We've got the space and the people, and who's got the knowledge? How can we work together?
Yeah. I love that. I think that's marvellous. And very timely at the moment.
Yeah, I think the other side of it, absolutely very timely. And the other side of it is we've got this beautiful whole order room, this health room that we're calling it. So we've already had approaches from the likes of St. John who might do blood pressure testing or Plunkett to work with our infants and our young people. So that's another opportunity as well, private sort of health space with... You know.
Yeah. For a long time, I think there's been this perception that Pukeri is a very privileged area anyway. And so, you know, does it need this sort of facility? You see more in that community than perhaps others have exposure to. What's your knowledge or experience of the diversity of your community?
I think it's extremely diverse. I think Pukeri, when it first established, was like, you know, some of those other affluent areas in our city now that we can think of. But that has significantly changed. A lot more working families. There's a lot of social housing, Kainaora properties, migrant families. There's a very diverse range of people. And we go a little bit further afield and think about St. Andrews, for example. Yeah. Take Sandwich Road as a dividing line. Yeah. Anything towards,
and that's not far from you, really, eh?
That's not far. That's part of our traditional catchment area, if you had to sort of put it in a box.
Yeah.
Not that we tend to. But if you take Sandwich Road as a dividing line, anything towards the river can generally be some of our most affluent families in our city. Anything back towards Tarapa Road can be the total other end of the spectrum. So Pukeri, St. Andrews, Tarapa, that area is a melting pot. And look, if the demand wasn't there, our numbers of usage wouldn't be as high as they are. So the demand is definitely there.
There's another element, and I know you'll agree with this, but I'm going to throw it out there because it's something I think we should talk about a little bit more. There's another element of the value of community houses, connecting people across some of that diversity of privilege or non-privilege, you know, in terms of social cohesion, creating spaces where people can bump and meet and connect. You know, libraries are another really good example, right, where people right across all of our communities, because sometimes our problems are born out of that segregation.
I couldn't agree more. Social isolation, all of those types of things. We've been really intentional in our design of this building to create spaces where community can just be.
Yeah.
So you don't need to come to the community centre because you're coming for a particular workshop or particular service. If you want to come and sit in the foyer and have a cup of tea and meet a friend or read a book or study for your exam, there is a space there for you to do that. And that is where we can build that, I guess, organic
yeah.
social connection, and we can start to bring down those walls.
Yeah, I think that's really critical, and especially in an environment, and we see this globally. This is not Hamilton. You know, no. Like globally we are seeing more and more division and people retrenching to quite hard and specific places, and we need to find opportunities to create communities.
Well, it's creating a third space, right?
Yes,
that whole
that's right.
story around third spaces and what do those look like. And
Actually, do want to explain third spaces, because I really started exploring that last year and thought, this is something we don't talk about enough.
Yeah, I've only really started scratching the surface of it, but you generally have home and work and sometimes that can be it.
Yeah, and for some people, home and work are the same place.
Do you know what? I find that a very Kiwi thing to same place as well as only those places.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
We go to work, we come home, especially in the winter, we close the curtains, we shut out the whole world. And in the morning, we open the curtains and we go back to work, and that's where we go.
Yeah.
Whereas overseas, and we don't have to look far, Australia, I lived there for a number of years. It's not uncommon to go and meet a friend at a cafe after work.
Yeah, our cafes close at 3. Yeah.
No coffee after 3 o'clock in this country, forget it.
No, that's right.
So how do we create those spaces again, which aren't home, which aren't work, but allow people to exist and connect and feel like they are part of something bigger?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm lucky having things like the dogs, you know, and being involved in that, but also indoor netball, you know, and so, you know, being able to create some of those opportunities, awesome, but they're not necessarily obvious for everybody.
Yeah, sometimes you've got to dig a little bit deeper.
And find what you're comfortable with.
Yeah, those people that live alone, especially our older community, you know, maybe they're widowed. You know, that's really hard.
So that's what I was going to ask you next then. Based on that, does this change the hours that you're going to be open? Like, how do you do that? Because generally community houses have quite restricted hours.
Yeah, I think in terms of our core services where we would see most of our staff, we would still maintain those core services, those core hours, right? But I think there's a world where that building is activated 7 days a week.
Yeah.
You know,
I think
there
so
should
too.
Be things happening on a Saturday and a Sunday, getting people into the space.
Mm.
Whether those services are delivered directly by us is a different question, right?
Yeah.
But I think there's some really cool groups out there already existing in the community, whether they are formal groups or whether those are groups that have just a bunch of like-minded people have come together. We have a guitar group on a Friday night.
Yeah.
And that's a young fella in the community who his mum wasn't too keen on him jamming in the garage on a Friday night. It's a bit loud.
Yeah.
He approached us. He'd whipped round another of people in the community.
Amazing.
And now we've got this guitar group that come and just jam together in the community centre on a Friday night.
Isn't that so cool?
I don't want to be working on a Friday night, but doesn't mean that the centre isn't open and operating and things happening in that space.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's designed for that, the new build? That it's designed, you know, like, because I know it looks quite open, which is fantastic. Does that create any limitations to accessibility for people outside of staffed office hours?
No, because we can control access through some tech solutions that allow us to go, yes, you can have a swipe card that'll open the front door and one meeting room, etc. Or an activity space and things like that. So we still have to realize what that might look like fully operationally.
Yep.
But that's our intent, is that there can be access without necessarily having to have the office staffed, if that makes sense.
And that's how you build a relationship with your community as well, having that sense of trust and community ownership of spaces.
And I think that's the key there, right? Okay, so we're building this building, the council owns it, our organisation is going to lease it and operate it.
Mm.
But actually, we've built this facility for our community. This is our space. And that word our is quite broad. You know, this is not owned by any one individual. Our organization is run by volunteers from the community. It's owned by the community.
Yeah.
We want to create a space where the community feels welcome. You know, that's a space. It's their space.
So let's just forecast to the end of 2026 or beginning of 2027, and we're sitting here having another conversation about how it's gone. What for you would be a real sense of success? Like if we're at this point, this time next year, and I say, how's it been? What would say to you, actually, we knocked this one out of the park?
That's a really good question.
I probably should have asked you to think about that before you came on it.
I think we've got some targets around utilization. We've worked out, okay, where are those booking? Where are those bookable hours? What do those spaces look like? How much of that space could we utilize within the first year? And we've set some relatively conservative goals. And then if we can get to 20% utilization in the first year, we'd be happy.
Awesome.
How we build that. And that, you know, financially, everything that goes with that is we're good too from that, right?
I'm going to talk to you about finances soon. I'm going to talk to you about your social enterprise shortly because I'm excited about that one. But I'll let you finish this thought first.
Yeah, and so I think it's that. I think it's operating well. The community are utilizing the space. That has to be the primary goal. If we build this beautiful big building and no one's using it, then I feel like that's a disappointment in itself. But I think...
Do you think you'll bring in new communities around Pukete and St Andrews as a result of this build?
I think so. I think we've already started to see some approaches from different communities, different organisations going, hey, what's going on over there?
Yeah.
You know, it's if you're moving through that park space, it's a big building. You can't miss it. And so it's generating a lot of conversation.
Yeah.
And I think once that word of mouth starts happening, you know, it's interesting. We even had the a work sort of provider, like a tradesperson in on site doing some stuff yesterday, and they saw the meeting rooms and went, actually, I would host a meeting here. I could host meetings here. So even little things like that, like if I've got a group of people, I'm hosting a group of people from Auckland, for instance, who might come down, we could come and have our meeting here. You know, so there's so many opportunities.
Yeah.
But we have to be realistic. We have to give ourselves time and space to go, right, we need to be good with the transition. It's going to take us a little while to really for it all to sink in.
Yeah.
But then once we go, look out.
Yeah.
I ain't holding back.
I love that. And I am going to commit to having that chat with you this time next year, eh? And you tell us about all the amazing things you've done. Yeah, that sounds good. Now, we've got 10 minutes still, and I really want to hear about what you guys are doing with this catering stuff, because we've used you a few times. This is a new initiative. I think we were one of the first off the rank, to get you guys on board to do some catering for a community event. It was amazing. Tell us about what you're doing, why, and what it looks like.
Okay, so what we're doing, in a nutshell, is we've started a small catering enterprise, the Pukete Catering Co. The idea is that this is food packed with purpose. This is the profits generated from this go back 100% into supporting community.
Yep.
Why is, well, obviously primary driver is financial.
Yeah.
But what really triggered it is at the back end of 2024, we were providing school lunches with the Ministry of Education.
Yeah.
With little to no warning, we were told we weren't getting renewal. Even after 6 months earlier, we had been told we were getting a renewal.
Yeah.
So we lost a significant piece of income. We had to reduce our staffing. And go through all of the stress of that.
It's a horrible, painful exercise.
Terrible. Never want to do it again.
Emotional. Like as the leader of an organisation, you feel the responsibility.
For me, right?
Yeah.
I tend to lead with heart first.
Absolutely.
And 9 times out of 10, that works well.
Yeah.
My brain knew I had no other choice.
Absolutely.
Right? Now, we can sit around, and I think it was at the Community Waikato Conference, I think it was Dave Latelli, who said we can sit and we can wait for government to fix problems. And that doesn't matter if it's this government, the next one after that. We probably sit for the rest of our lifetime waiting for that to be fixed. Or we can get up and we can do something about it.
Yeah.
So once we come out the backside of losing that contract, picked ourselves up and dust ourselves off and regrouped, we went, okay, we have a commercial kitchen. We have knowledge. We have some skill.
Mm-hmm.
Let's test the market. So that's where the idea was born. And the idea being that every piece of food that we pack is packed with purpose.
Yeah.
And one other huge thing to consider in this country is a cultural context of kai, of food. It is expected when we hui have meetings in this country that food is provided.
Yeah.
Food is part of that. Sometimes I'll only go to meetings because of the food, right?
I've been there.
I'm not ashamed to admit that, okay? And I've come away from meetings and go, oh, that guy was a bit rubbish, right?
I know, yeah.
So, but that cost of food through other ways can be quite expensive, can be cost prohibitive. So how can we keep food affordable, also whilst generating a small amount of profit that we then reinvest back into community?
Yeah.
And that's effectively it in a nutshell.
Small and quality as well. Like, so it was affordable, but it's quality food.
Affordable, and it's quality and easy.
We were, like, genuinely, our team were surprised. And I don't mean this in a bad way. Mm-hmm. I mean this in a really genuinely good way. But we were really surprised at how good the food was, how tasty it was, like, and the breadth of, you know, like, there are lots of different options. And I didn't realise that, you know, I don't have to have it as a wrap or a sandwich. I could have it as a salad.
Right.
And for me, like, that's always a massive bonus.
So we took a lot of time to really think about the menu.
Yeah.
What are those key proteins? What are those proteins that aren't meat-based?
Yes.
And what is the vessel that we can really do it in? So we went with, well, sandwich.
Yeah.
Then we can change to a wrap.
Yeah.
We can change to a pita pocket. We could change to a bread roll. Or we can do away with the bread and the carb altogether and do salad. And then all you're doing is you're mixing up those different ingredients.
Yeah.
Now you've got a menu that really consists of 10 items but can be presented in 45 different ways.
Yeah, yeah. That was amazing. We got your catering as well for our community Christmas lunch.
Yes.
And it was awesome. We went out to the Sculpture Park, you know, at Scotsman Valley. Amazing. But then having food there as well, already packaged up so we could have a picnic.
And that was the idea, right? Already packaged up, ready to go. I'd seen it in other places. You know, we've had some really good support from the likes of yourselves, GoEco, YWCA.
Yeah.
A number of community organisations who have really gotten behind it. And there's some wins there. We're going to really ramp it up in this coming year.
Yeah.
Push really hard. New building's got a kitchen 2.5 times the size of what we've got now, so there's no excuses.
Yep.
But again, we had to look at ways that we could generate revenue that didn't require a huge amount of outlay. So what are the resources?
Yeah.
What of the...
Yeah, what do you currently already have?
What do we have and how do we capitalise on what we already have?
Without cannibalising from our community, right? Because that's the hard part. When we work with vulnerable communities, what we don't want to do is create barriers through cost for communities to try and raise revenue when we're actually, that's the community we're trying to serve and reduce those barriers.
So we run a pricing model on our catering that is our standard rate and then our community rate where there's a discount applied. So we understand that there's those nonprofits, charitable organisations that are going, you know what, we need food and we can do that at a really affordable price. And saying that, our standard pricing is still affordable too.
Yeah.
But we've had law firms, for instance, that we've catered for who have been happy to. And in fact, it was through their feedback initially.
Yep.
They're one of our first clients who said, you need to run two pricing models because we could pay way more for this.
Yeah.
And that's your corporate pricing and your community pricing is what you've charged us. So
it's
incredible to have a customer come back and say,
We'd pay more.
We will pay more. We want to pay more.
Yeah.
What can we? And then we worked with them to try and help
figure out what that pricing looks like.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely brilliant. And I also think that speaks to the ethics of a number of our corporate partners, right? Like sometimes it's easy to feel as the nonprofits, the charitable sector, that we're out there doing all that hard mahi, which we are. But we have to give credit sometimes as well to those corporate spaces who absolutely walk with values.
Yeah, and 100%. And I'll name that law firm right here, McCall Lewis and the McCall Lewis Foundation.
I'm not at all
Foundation,
surprised.
Right?
Yeah.
That staff fund, that giving, the support that they give to community far and wide, ourselves included,
absolutely,
is unbelievable. So not every corporate out there is this sort of cold money. That there is some amazing work happening by our corporate partners and
yeah,
you know, that's just one example.
So. I think that's absolutely brilliant. And I really appreciate they gave you that feedback as well and helped you through that kind of pricing journey. If someone's listening and they're thinking, actually, I'd be quite keen to give these guys, we've got some catering coming up that we need. How would they go about ordering?
So simple. It's a simple email, catering@pukete.org.nz. Alyssa, who's looking after that for us, is incredible. She will take care of you. She can get menus out to you, pricing work through as well. There's though sometimes people need something a little bit more bespoke. Maybe there's some complex dietary needs.
I was going to ask you all of that. I was going to ask you about dietary needs. I've got a friend who's celiac, and that's really problematic when people go, oh, we can do gluten-free, but it's not gluten-free celiac safe.
Yes. So we can manage all of those.
Yes.
Because we're already managing those kind of constraints with our children's program.
Oh, great.
Right?
Yeah.
So we have separate, cooking appliances and things like that for our celiac whānau. And we can work through those as well. And the biggest thing is people sort of say, well, how many do you have to do? We have catered for an event as big as 3 people, all the way up to, I think, your one, which I think was around
112 or something.
Yeah, it was into the hundreds. We can go bigger than that. So it doesn't matter how big or small the catering or the event is, we got you.
I think that's absolutely brilliant. And I'd encourage people to spread the word about that as well. I often have people go, oh, who do you know can cater? And then when you're on the spot, you're like, I don't know. So remember
Pukete Catering Co. And it's really simple, catering@pukete.org.nz or 07849-1115.
And so that's your main number as well?
Yep.
Yep, cool. All your services are operating as normal? Are you fully back on board as of, the...
We are easing in. School holiday program is definitely in. Our Kaivolution or our free store food rescue with GoEco won't start until February.
Yeah.
Our food bank is starting back in the coming week. And then pretty much from then we are full steam ahead.
Okay, so that's really good to know. It's always a tough time of year, for people because the services right across our city do tend to wind up for a period of time. So I'm sure that it'll start back with a hiss and a roar with Kaivolution in February. And you're still on the board of the food bank?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm the chairperson.
Whoa, that's here for your sins. This is what happens.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's good fun. But there's lots of challenges in that space too. Lots of things to try and solve, if you like.
Yeah. These challenges are what make us stronger, right?
All you do is you wake up in the morning, put one foot in front of the other and keep going.
That's exactly right. We've got only about 30 seconds left. So do you have a message for our listeners before we wind up?
Oh, look, keep the March the 6th in your calendar free. There'll be a big community event open to everybody in the evening. Big Kai, come and celebrate, come and enjoy it. And look, let's hope that this is the first of many for our city, because there's other areas of our community that need these spaces too, not just Pukete.
I think it's going to completely reactivate the community, and I think it's wonderfully exciting. That is us for another week. You've been listening to Connect with Community Waikato, Free FM 89.0.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.